Reading from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Book 2, Chapter 1, Text 2. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam Bodhi Piyusham Idam Apiban. Vachityama Muni Shreshta. Tvam Mukham Bhojavasitam. O best of the sages, I cannot drink enough of this nectarian ocean of Srimad Bhagavatam. Its fragrance enhanced by contact with your lotus mouth. Purport. Although Janamejaya Maharaj has already tasted perfect nectar in part one, he still wants to taste more. The Bhagavatam and other scriptures that reveal the secrets of pure devotional service are Srimat, full of beauty and riches. These exceptional scriptures are like boundless oceans, for the scriptures are vast, not only in size, but also in scope of their ideas. Just one second here. Just as the ocean of milk is the greatest ocean, Srimad Bhagavatam is the greatest devotional scripture. Unfathomably deep. In the narrations of Narada's search for the greatest object of Sri Krishna's mercy, Janamejaya has enthusiastically drunk the exquisite, sweet nectar of the Bhagavatam. Nonetheless, his thirst is not yet quenched, because Jaimini has mixed into this nectar the attractive fragrance emanating from his own lotus mouth. Janamejaya's thirst to hear has become so much stimulated that he cannot hear enough. Om Gyana Timurandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vairagya Bhakti Visham Priyatnai Atayama Manadipsamandam Kripam Vriya Paraduka Duki Sanatanastam Prabhumasyami Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Krita Shindu Bhayedaja Patita Nam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasade Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from Moscow. I'll stay here for a week. I hope we have good reception from here. I came for the opening of a yoga, a spa yoga center, which was done by Ananda Govardhan, a very dear student of mine here. And it has a beautiful satsang hall, which I'll give a class every evening. But I'll have to take pictures on Facebook. The place is an absolute work of art. It's just exquisite, the mood that's created there. We had a nice program, and it was offered to me in that mood. It student. I think I would be happy to teach. Anyway, it's very beautiful and very, very comfortable, well taken care of here. Meeting many, many nice people. And I also did my drama for the first time in Russian with a translator. And then we had a... Okay, one second here. I'm going to try something. Okay, it doesn't seem I can still mute my phone, so I tried something here. So people really have to mute your phones from that side. From here, I can't. So, yeah, we have to tolerate the people that don't mute their phones. We also did that drama that I do, The Monk and the Thespian, and I had a good translator to do my part, and then there was one, actress in theater, just like the author of the drama, Alex, is, and really nice. She came, she spent all day just learning the parts and seeing how to read it, and then we performed it, so that was fun. Okay, now the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. It's the second part, and to put it in context of this wonderfully exciting story, Janamejaya is hearing from Jaimini Rishi kind of a commentary on the Mahabharata, as I remember, but it's a higher form. But basically, everything is the Vedas. Everything is knowledge. It's just a question how it's packaged and presented. And in the Vaishnav tradition of the Bhagavatam, we consider that the Bhagavatam is a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, which is a kind of a presentation of the Bhagavatam to help you conceptualize and understand it. And that before that, the Mahabharata was written to express the same ideas in story form. There's a material existence, there's the world, and there's knowledge. And knowledge tells us the purpose and utility of everything, according to what the world is. Knowledge is a description of the world and a utility of the world. And the world is manifest for us to who are bound to understand God and our relationship with God and our relationship with the body in relationship to God, and the relationship of God to matter. And this is the purpose of knowledge. Vedaischa sarveham eva vedyo vedanta vedvedakrit eva kshaham. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, from all the Vedas I am to be known. So it may be a different package, but it may be a different package, but it all has the same objective, for us to understand the truth. And according to Brihat Bhagavatamrita, which is also a commentary on the essence of the Bhagavatam, which is also it's the essence of the Mahabharata, the purpose of the is to help us understand who we are and what is our relationship to everything else. In other words, our relationship to everything else is really delineating what is our function or purpose Without understanding our function, our purpose, self-realization, that's what self-realization means, to understand what you're made of and what you're made for, there can't be any satisfaction or happiness because there's not harmony between your function and what you're doing. And we see on every level how much that causes dissatisfaction. Even on the mental plane, what is your function? What are your mental capacities? What are your mental desires? What are your intellectual? And if you're not doing it, you're not happy. And in terms of the body, what are your modes? What is your body best suited for? What is the function of your body in this lifetime? And if you're not lined up with it, you're not happy. And socially, what is your social position? Are you a brahmachari or are you a grihastha? And if you're a brahmachari, if your function is grihastha, but your activity is brahmachari, we know how much disturbance that can be. Or vice versa. So, this sambandha, this relationship between ourselves and everything else, the relationship between the part and what it is part of, is the most essential and important knowledge. And that's what all scriptures are connected to ultimately, either directly or indirectly. So we see this here that Dhanamanjaya, you know, he wants to hear, you know, another kind of commentary on the Mahabharata. There's a higher commentary. There's one that is assuming that the audience has a higher frame of reference and can reveal it, the absolute truth, more directly. And in that regard, his guru relates the story of Brihadbhagavatamrita. And Brihadbhagavatamrita, as we've been reading, it's Maharaj Parikit, cursed to die. He hears the Bhagavatam, and on his last day, his mother comes. And because his mother is such an exalted soul, it's really time to silence and detachment at the end of the life. But on this spiritual platform, he feels inspired to share with his mother on his mother's request this same the Bhagavatam. She sees how ecstatic he is. The face is definitely an index of the mind. You can see in someone's face what their consciousness is. In fact, I read this story, I don't know where it is, but there was this man who studied the face and came out with like thousands of expressions and how they're manifest in the face. And miraculously, and he taught this, he could tell anything about anyone from any picture. He could tell exactly what they're experiencing. So when there is bliss and satisfaction in the heart, it's overtly and obviously manifested. So she saw the face of her son and knew that he had something to give. I tell a kind of a story in that regard. this is not the last time, but the previous time when they were cleaning out Radhakund. I guess they do it every 12 years or whatever it is. And you get Kanchanakund, the original kund in the middle. And then there's a long drop-off from the top stairs, the bottom stair, to the mud ground. So somehow the Borijan and myself, we were going to America. On the way, we somehow stopped on Radhakund. We only had a short time. We wanted to get darshan of Radhakund. And we were taking the public transportation, and we had a very, very short time. So we got there, and Borijan said, I guess maybe I was going or something. He said, well, we don't have some time. You go down. I'll watch your things. There's some child crying there. You have to mute your phone. I can't mute the phone from here. So I'm going to try to mute the phone again, but it doesn't. Okay, I was successful, I think. So what happened is I was running down, I was going to the middle of the kund, and it was so impressive, too. There was these old widows that were bent, and they were, you know, walking down there. So and when Borijan from the distance saw me put the drops on my head, he saw and can see almost the transformation in me. Or I don't know how it seemed that way, because all of a sudden I see him running through the mud coming down. He couldn't resist. But anyway, whether that's whether that's actually what happened in the sense that that's what he saw. But the point is, he saw that. He saw that. The mother saw that, and he said, you have to share with me. So he gives a summary of the Bhagavad Gita. And we've discussed this many, many times, what realization is. It's understanding the truth so deeply by the personal application of that truth that you have the ability to communicate it, which requires reforming it according to the frame of reference of your audience. So now Maharaj Prickett, with that deep, deep realization, he's going to reform the essence of the Bhagavad Gita, which is the creme de la creme, the sar de la sar, the essence of the essence. He's going to reform that for his mother. And he seeks to be a Bhagavad Gita Pandita. And that's what we discussed in the first verse, which Janamanjaya said. I guess he's speaking to his guru, that my father gleaned the sara, the essence of, after collecting all the eternal scriptures, he gleaned the essential meaning. And with great love for Krishna, because that's how love is expressed. Love is expressed primarily in glorification. Those whom you love, you talk about. And he revealed to his mother what was Gudha, confidential, and Dulabha, very, very rare. And now Janamanjaya continues. And he's expressing his enthusiasm for what he's heard. And he's expressing that trityami. I am not satiated. Natrityami, I am not satiated. I cannot get enough. Piyusham of this nectar, abiban, bibita, same word as the Bhagavatam, bibita Bhagavatam rasa. Just like in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, the introduction. Nigana Tapakura Kalitam Talam Sukha Mukat Amrita Dragyasham Bibita Bhagavatam Rasamalaya. He's saying that it's such a wonderful book, and therefore Vyasa is saying it's such a wonderful book, and he's saying Bibita Bhagavatam Rasamalaya. You drink this. It's an analogy, but there is a drinking with the ears. There's a relish with the ears. And it's very similar to drinking something. Because when you're drinking something, it's flowing, it's pouring. It's a stream of something. So when you're hearing something that's very, very relishable, and the most relishable thing is talks of love of whom you love. So when you hear about love of Godhead, and you have love of Godhead, it's an incredible, relish. It's a perfect analogy. You're tasting. We've had that experience, I think most of us, in some type of spiritual experience from chanting the holy name or hearing something very, very profound and spiritual, where when the static of the mind decreases and we're actually able to be nishta or fixed on something in which we have a relationship with, hearing about that, it creates a great joy or relish in the heart. Says, I cannot drink enough. And he's serious. It's so good. Because it's a drop of the essence of the Supreme Lord's blissful potency, which is love. Love is an existential reality that exists within the divine, which can be put in the hearts of sincere souls who have the desire to serve the desire, the divine. Nitya Krishna Das, the soul is eternally a servant of the divine. And when that spirit of service manifests when that spirit of service becomes uncovered within the heart, calling out to serve the divine, then one gets the ultimate service, which is to be a receptacle for that potency of the divine, that pleasure potency, which is love, which is the pleasure of the divine and the pleasure of one who is the receptacle for that potency. And it's an energy. And that energy flows through the heart. And there's indescribable pleasure in that. A lot of times I feel, I myself, I had that experience. What is religious experience? True religious experience. I think it's that. I think somehow or other, either, you know, by inconceivable mercy or some introduction by God to that path for someone who has the potential to enter into that kind of service, Abbas, a shadow, a shadow of that, a reflection of that enters into the heart. And when that reflection or drop of bhakti enters in the heart, we have shraddha, we have faith, we trust that to do this and to get this is the pinnacle of sublimity. And when you get that in your heart, then you search to perfect that for the rest of your life. But there are people who have perfected that, who have opened their heart to God, the divine. What bhakti or devotion means is the mood of making oneself available for service, to make oneself an instrument for the will of the divine. But it's a complete shift in consciousness, because we're generally entangled in a kind of view that we put ourselves in the center and see the world in relationship to our desires. That is not the standpoint where that energy can flow. Another energy flows from that position. It's called maya, illusion. So we have to move to the position of service and want that humble position. And when one has it and that energy flows, you cannot get enough of it. It's so good. And you want to do it all the time. You become God intoxicated. So here, this Janamejaya has heard that love in the form of the sacred text that his guru is relating. It's another expression of the same thing. He cannot drink enough of it. Wants to taste more. Why? It says Srimad Bhagavata. Srimad means that this book is full of beauty and riches. And it says it's boundless, like an ocean, not only in size, because these sacred texts are so vast, but in the scope of their ideas and realizations. And this is my own experience, my own faith in reading the Bhagavatam, reading the Bhagavad Gita, and studying sacred texts, is that it's not just an intellectual process. You're not reading something, so because knowledge is power, it's another way of putting yourself in the center and controlling people, is by having the opulence of knowing more than others and using knowledge to having knowledge that enables you to manipulate the world around you to put yourself in a position over others. But it's a completely different type of reading. It's a reading of service and surrender and trying to get the understanding on how to do that. And when one studies and reads in that way, then there's something that comes beyond the intellect. And it's unlimited in scope and ideas. Tesham satatiyatanam bhajatam pittipur vakam vidhami buddhi yogam tvam yena mam upiyat. For one who worships me with faith and love, devotion, I give them the knowledge. So it's a revelation within the text that manifests through the text. And therefore, I've heard that great teachers, they would relish words, and they would pray to words, and volumes of meaning would come. In my own experience, and anyone who's actually really taken the time to study the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, okay, things have come out that you've never read or never seen before, even though are obviously valid, even though so many great scholars and teachers have written commentaries before. And that's another reason why Janamejaya can't get enough of this, because it's very beautiful poetry. It says here, Vasitam, not only is hearing this sacred text, but the sacred text has a certain fragrance that enhances it by contact with the lotus mouth. Lotus is always doing something that's very beautiful. It's not an odd-shaped mouth. Lotus, if you see a lotus flower, it's really the one thing in this world that looks like it's in the world but someplace else. Transcendental. By his guru. And that's what's... He's drunk this nectar, and but he still can't get enough, because it's mixed with a fragrance of the conviction and realization of the person who is speaking it. When something is spoken with realization and conviction, it has a more powerful effect. The story that Prabhupada would tell about that is, I believe, you know, when he told the story when a mother brought his child to Mahatma Gandhi and asked Mahatma Gandhi, please tell my child to give up eating sweets. He's getting cavities, he's getting sick, he eats too many. He says, please come back in a week. She comes back in a week and Mahatma Gandhi says, stop eating sweets. The child hears it and he's affected greatly. And then the mother takes the child outside, just wait here. And she goes back in and she says, Mahatma, why did you tell me to tell him that last week? And Mahatma said, I first have to give up taking sweets. So there's something about conviction. There's something about conviction and realization that makes it sweeter, because one reason is because that realization enables one to communicate it to his audience. See, it's good to have the book. And the book is dynamic. But when you have the teacher of the book, he can connect the message to your understanding. It's just like it's great to have a pharmacy with all medicine, but when you have the doctor, he can negotiate between what's in the pharmacy and your condition and prescribe the things that are relevant to you and in what order. So someone who is expert and realized in the teachings, the sacred texts, he has a way of presenting it and presenting it in the proper order so that one can realize it. Text 213. Tamatta putayo didvan sambhada katyatam tayo shudhatsara mayo yogi krishna padhabja lubdaya. Therefore, O learned one, please tell me what other nectarian topics were discussed by the mother and son, who were greedy to enjoy the taste of Krishna's lotus feet. So now he's approaching humbly his guru, Jaimanivri, narrating this wonderful story about his father sharing what he's heard, Marge Cricket's father, to his grandmother. Speak to her. And he wants to know, Kapiatam, please narrate. Anya, other topics, Shubha, other pure, wonderful topics, which Saramaye, which is imbued with this essence. Please tell me what they discuss, those who were Lugdayo, greedy, for Pada, Padabja, Krishna Pada, for the lotus feet of Krishna. And again, the lotus feet is another analogy. It indicates the greatness when you can describe the feet as worshipable. As you're describing the absolute greatness of a person. You're starting, it's so great, you're starting with the bottom. You're starting with the lowest. We know even in India, the term for shoemaker is muchi. Muchi means dirty. The feet are the dirtiest thing of the body. And one who is servicing them, he has a low profession in that type of culture. So, here's two more qualifications for hearing and speaking. One wants to learn. He calls his guru Vidvan. So, the topic is not only for those that are pure. So, it's wonderful that they're pure. But the guru is not just pure, the guru is Vidvan. He has the knowledge. You can be pure, but not have, you know, knowledge. But the teacher has to have knowledge because the teacher, it doesn't mean he has to be a scholar, but he has to have sufficient knowledge, sufficient realization to clear one's doubts. Because doubts prevent movement. If there is truth and you have doubts in the truth, then you will progress more slowly towards the truth. So teacher clears doubts to accelerate your movement towards the truth. And therefore, the teacher is there to explain and clear doubt. Because the absolute truth requires thoughtfulness to understand, and it requires faithfulness to have conviction in what you understand. So, he says, learned one, you're competent. You not only realize in this subject, but you know this subject deeply. And please let me know what other topics were discussed. You know. And who is discussing those topics? People who had greed. They had a deep realization, a deep faith that this is the truth, that inclined them to want it to the highest degree, and that's called greed. And that's the qualification for bhakti. Qualification for bhakti is that you have a taste and realization of it to a certain degree that you want it. And you want it so much, You're willing to do what is ever necessary to get it. Doesn't mean renounce the world. It means renounce those things which have no value to your objective, according to your adhikari, a level of evolution. But there's lobha, mayi, shraddha. You're filled with greed. And this is the qualification, that somehow or other this truth has touched your heart to such a degree that you want it so much that you'll do anything to get it. I remember Ayendra Prabhu in Vrindavan. He so much wanted to know his eternal relationship with Krishna. I remember him coming into my room crying deeply that he wanted to know this. He really wanted to know, and he would do anything for it. Kartik is coming up. You perform Kartik for the pleasure of Srimati Radharani. It's Hermand. You can get her mercy. And he would just give up eating. He would be, practically sometimes he'd be dying from his endeavors. But he wanted it. He wanted it more than anything else, even his life. I saw that. And people like that, they're 24 hours a day engaged. No matter what they're doing, that's their objective, that's their thoughts. So we're actually learning the qualifications to enter into these topics, because the previous book, we know it was a very, very gradual progression of understanding, a very, very gradual progression of understanding. And one truth builds on another truth, gives you further, further frame of reference. So now, the next book is going to build on that. So we're seeing what happens when you hear and practice in the proper way. You relish it so much that you can't get enough of it. And you are greedy for it. And you want to approach people that have understanding of it. Text 214. Sujan, first I want to thank Rati Krishna. He got me called an iPad, where I have all the books on it. And whatever, I guess it's Yukta Vairagya, using some Krishna service. But it's been very effective because, you know, I have the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. One thing I don't have to carry is the heavy books wherever I go. And, with the new airline regulations, I was just at the limit with one bag. But more than that, I'm not like a salesman for Apple or whatever it is, but I'm just saying I have it able to take notes within the text. And I used to have all these yellow pads all over the place. So I'm just appreciating that it's facilitating this. I have my notes right in the pad, just, and they're there. Sujayamine uvacha naitatsva shaktiko rajan tatum gatum shushakyate sarvajanam chudurgayam ramanu bhavinam api. Okay. Sujayamine said, O king, to understand or speak about these topics by one's own strength is impossible. Even all-knowing sages who directly perceive the absolute truth find them difficult to comprehend. So there's two problems, he's saying. I guess he's speaking to Marge Prickett. Now he is, but No. It's Chaimini Rishi now. He's answering after Janamejaya. And he's saying, no king, because that's Janamejaya is a king. He's the son of Marj Prickett. So Chaimini Rishi now is Guru's answering, and he's saying, this is not an easy task to explain these subjects. Because even those who are sarvajnanam, all-knowing, they're sarvajnanam, they're all-knowing, and they're brahma anubhavinam, they directly experience the absolute truth, even such people, durgyayam, they find it difficult to comprehend. Anand? Okay. Did your parents see downstairs? He liked it? Very much. Okay. I think this is working. It's good. I'll be finished in 10 minutes. Okay? Right. So, I had a nice talk with Mahamuni when we were discussing the Narada Bhakti Sutras. And when it says not by Gyan, he was discussing too. This is from also a classical sense of, you know, understanding of Siddharshans and what they do. That it means more, not by Gyan, it means not by your own effort. It's just like knowing a person. It's not just by your effort. It's got to be by the person's mercy, which usually comes as a result of a relationship with that person. So when one's on the path of bhakti, to know the absolute truth is not within his powers. In fact, if he feels it's within my power, then that's an egotistical conception that's actually the cause of blocking one from understanding the absolute truth. It has to be revealed. So that has to be just an understanding of the absolute truth, a devotional understanding. There has to be an attitude towards the absolute truth. And that's the perfect example given by Narada Muni. You know, he initially was helpless. And he was trying to understand the absolute truth, and the absolute truth appeared. Then the absolute truth disappeared. And he tried the same thing, but perhaps that initial success gave him a sense of self-power mixed with his effort that didn't allow him to see the absolute truth the second time. And it was revealed that he wasn't actually qualified the first time. He got mercy. And if you want to have that attitude, you're going to have to work for it. You're going to have to become detached completely, even from the mode of goodness. Not that we don't cultivate the mode of goodness, but our attachment is the pleasure of Krishna. Of course, we cultivate the mode of goodness for that, but that's not our goal, to be peaceful. Our goal is the pleasure of God. So you're not qualified. And to do that, you have to develop the mood of seva bhav, the mood of service. You're not completing service. It means you're not completing the attitude of service, which means you have to increase your service. Commentary, the essence of the science of pure devotion to Krishna is beyond the power of words to explain or the mind to comprehend. Even mystics who can see past, present, and future, and even liberated souls whose mind are attuned to deceiving transcendental reality fail to understand the glories of Goloka revealed in the nectar ocean of Srimad Bhagavatam. Much more exalted in the spiritual reality of impersonal Brahman is the ultimate reality shared by the personality of Godhead and his devotees. Brahman means you can, it's still mercy, but you have an understanding and experience of God, it's kind of like seeing someone, but without having a relationship. There's a limited, it limits how much you can see one. Okay, that's basically what I prepared today, but is there any questions?
Thanks a lot for a really wonderful class. It's really inspiring.
Well, thank you.
Everything sounded fine, too, for what it's worth, from Moscow. you might as well have been next door or something.
Well, you know, the hospitality here is just overwhelming. The place that I'm staying in and the facility they're giving me to do service, it's actually kind of like a bit of a retreat because everything is here in the same building that I'm doing, you know. I mean, the family even has a devotee cook that they actually hire for their business.
Wow.
So the devotee cook's here. It's a very pleasant atmosphere, and Jagadish, who introduced me here, you know, he's also my translator. So it's a very nice facility. Yeah. Go ahead, Maureen.
You had mentioned a little toward the end of the class, you were talking about the role of the teacher to remove doubts. Because doubts, they inhibit your ability to move toward your objective. And certainly that makes sense, and certainly in our own experience that seems to be what happened.
Yeah.
But what I was wondering about is, you had mentioned in the past that sometimes, or actually it's not that uncommon, even Jiva Goswami, I think you had said, talks about this, that disciples will hear things from their guru, but just naturally they may hear the words, but they won't understand what's being said because it's filtered through their own framework. And so what I was wondering is, do you think that there's a way in which, I mean, because like, so for example, right now for my teaching in my school, I've been reading a lot of Taoist philosophy because I'm teaching a course on world philosophy, and so there's a Chinese component. And a lot of these great Taoist teachers, it seems like their goal is to kind of introduce complexity or introduce misunderstandings in their students to kind of break up their rigid picture of the world. You know, so in a way, they use paradox, or they create doubt because they're trying to undermine their very limited worldview. And so I wanted to ask you, do you think there's a role for the guru in creating doubt in a certain way for certain objectives?
It's when you say, you know, he removes doubt, he doesn't remove doubt in the app, you know, he doesn't, the doubt is of the absolute truth. In other words, the teacher doesn't want to create doubt in the absolute truth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to create in that which is not true. So obviously that's a function of a teacher, you know. And how do you create doubt in that which is not true is you give faith in that which is true. But I want to say another point, which I think you brought up, that has to be clarified. There's one thing is to have faith in the right thing, right?
Yeah.
And then,